Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of My Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Today on the show, we have Charles Booker, the Democratic nominee for the 43rd District, which is an interesting district. It goes along the river from West Louisville all the way to like Indian Hills neighborhood. So it's some of the poorest neighborhoods in the city and then some of the most wealthy. So we talked to him about that. We talked to him about why he's running, stuff that animates him. It was a good conversation. So I'm glad that we got him on the show. Glad to hear from him. In addition, we're about to talk about some stuff. Jasmine's going to talk to us about Matt Bevin going judge shopping. And then we have a bunch of quick hit stuff about Tim Longmire, retirements of public workers, some stuff about higher education. Without any further ado, Jasmine, tell us about the governor going judge shopping.
Okay. I titled the segment, The Governor Goes Judge Shopping, but I actually hate the phrase judge shopping.
Why do you hate it so much?
Because there are very often legitimate conflicts that warrant recusal and disqualification. I've had judges that, you know, see the same person over and over, and I do believe that there are situations where they develop a personal bias against certain people. They may have some kind of conflict or relationship or stake in the situation, and I've been very close to filing recusal motions in a lot of my cases when I feel like a judge has a personal bias. And I've also had judges voluntarily recuse themselves. So I had a case with a police officer was a witness in a case, and the judge knew his parents really well. And so she recused herself because she knew that she had that bias and didn't even want to give the impression that she might be biased against my client. So recusal and disqualification motions are not all bad.
Right.
But the governor is trying to disqualify Judge Philip Shepard. So he moved to disqualify Judge Shepard from hearing the suit on the pension bill. He argued that a special judge should be appointed because the pension bill lawsuit could personally affect Judge Shepard's pension. So one, Judge Shepard said that the new law would not affect judge pensions.
Right.
So there's that.
Right.
And two, I mean, a lot of legal challenges personally affect people on a very basic level, right? Mm-hmm. So like most laws apply to everyone. So there are a lot of laws that might impact a judge in some way, you know, like a tax lawsuit. Everyone pays taxes.
Right.
So I don't think you can just disqualify every judge because it might have some very basic personal effect.
Right. I mean, because the idea here is like the new pension law, it doesn't actually affect the judicial pensions. Like his pension isn't changing, but like maybe the funding mechanism might change and it could change some things about the pension. And so you're saying like that's every law.
Every law applies to everyone, yeah. in most cases at least.
And
so
and it seems like that this is a far enough distance away from actually impacting the judicial pension that he shouldn't necessarily have to recuse himself.
Right. And you know, the governor also did argue that how Judge Shepard has handled the case so far suggests that he cannot be impartial.
Uh-huh.
And we've talked about that before on the show. Governor Bevin put Judge Shepard on blast a few weeks ago, calling him an incompetent hack. but we talked about how he's actually won in front of him before. He's won a couple of his suits.
I have to say that if somebody calls you an incompetent hack, and, you know, you rule in favor of them at any point, like, I feel like that goes to show how impartial he is as a judge, you know? So, you know, maybe Matt Bevin should just bring some better lawsuits to Judge Shepard, and then he wouldn't lose so often, maybe.
Right. So Chief Justice Minton, that is the Chief Justice of Skokie, heard the governor's motion, and he did not find that there was any disqualifying circumstance that required appointing a special judge, and he denied that motion. So that happened on June 6th. Then in a hearing on June 7th, Judge Shepard questioned and expressed concerns about the quick legislative process of the sewer/pension bill. Judge Shepard told the parties that he would issue a ruling as quickly as possible in the case because it's set to go into effect soon. So if the governor loses, we're going to certainly see a timely appeal to Skokie. He's already, you know, made on record his concerns about how it was passed. I don't know if he'll actually find that there were any constitutional violations or anything like that about how it was passed. So I don't know how he's going to rule, but I think we'll get that ruling pretty soon.
Yeah, that'll be very interesting. And it'll be interesting to read because that could have implications about this entire process of how passing legislation by hollowing out other pieces of legislation and pushing them forward. If that is ruled.
Right. Because that's something that's been happening. Like, it's not novel to this bill.
and it's not novel to any either particular political party.
Right.
But the thing is, and this is something I saw a tweet from Whitney Westerfield that kind of made me roll my eyes a little bit the other day when he was like, oh, you know, we passed the heroin bill. Oh, gosh, was that 2015 or whatever year that was? It was kind of recent, but I think it was either 2014 or 2015. And he said, we passed the heroin bill using the same tactic. Does, you know, Andy Beshear or I guess Judge Shepard here, this what is the example here, do those people think that this is also, a travesty of democracy? And of course, like when the heroin bill passed, it was bipartisan. It was something that everybody wanted to have passed. But by the time the issue came to the fore, it was after the deadline for introducing legislation had passed. So they had to do something. They had to hollow out another bill, even though it had the approval of the entire legislature. So it would be interesting to see how Judge Shepard rules here, because he's like, hey, you know, the problem is that you hollowed out another bill. That means we can't use that even if for bipartisan stuff. Or if he says, you know, the problem is that there wasn't enough discussion. There wasn't a process that was followed. So, you know, if he does rule against this practice, it could be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, another quick example. For a couple of times in a row, the state didn't pass a budget and kind of reverted the authority to just implement a budget to the governor. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that now. And so that, you know, common tactic, that common thing that had happened in the past was no longer allowed to happen. So this is not unprecedented, even in recent history, that, you know, the behavior of the legislature has to change based on a ruling by the judicial branch. Mm-hmm. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. Okay, Jasmine, are you ready to hear some quick hits?
Yep.
Okay, excellent. Tim Longmire, talked about him before on the show.
We have, very early on.
Yeah, and maybe not too much recently, but Tim Longmire, he testified in the trial of James Sullivan, who is a lobbyist who stands accused of bribing him. So as a reminder, Tim Longmire was Steve Beshear's personnel secretary and former deputy attorney general under Andy Beshear. Longmire was caught taking bribes by the FBI. That needs a comma or something. The FBI was not bribing Mr. Longmire. He was caught by the FBI in the midst of taking bribes. And anyways, Mr. Longmire ended up working with the FBI to record Mr. Sullivan offering bribes to him. Many in the media and many Republicans have said that this scandal might go pretty deep, and it's been said that many Democrats are nervously watching, but we will see. And of course, everybody is pointing fingers at everybody else, and nobody's like, I had no idea this was going on. So we'll see what the trial turns up. Jasmine, there was a report over the past week that said retirements of public workers spiked by 18% during the fiscal year that ended in May. The amount of state government workers that retired is spiked by 30%. So 18% in general, 30% for state government workers. That's a large amount. August, though, you know, so the fiscal year ended in May. August is actually the most popular month for retirements. So this problem might just be getting started. And it may be that, you know, now that the pension bill has passed, the next fiscal year might be even more than the previous one. So that's not great. We have
right.
to replace all these people.
Yeah. High increase.
Yeah. And of course, with fewer workers, that's less money that goes into the pension. And that's not great. Okay, Governor Matt Bevin, who, you know, just as another reminder, he has an East Asian Studies degree. Matt Bevin was asked if he was concerned with the cuts being made to public universities across the state after the state cut their budgets by 6.25% this year. His response, quote, "No. In fact, I'm encouraged by the fact that for the first time in a very long time, our state universities are looking at what they offer that is adding value and what they are offering that adds less value or maybe no value or maybe negligible value," unquote. So Matt Bevin, again, I mean, this is a constant theme for him. He just doesn't care about higher education is kind of what I get the sense. And I mean, I think he fundamentally understands the purpose of higher education. I think he thinks you need to go to be an engineer or, you know, a computer scientist or nothing. Like there's no value in learning about political science or, you know, humanities of any variety, which is kind of a shame because those are really important skills. You learn a lot and you become a better person if you study those things, in my opinion.
We both have political science degrees,
that's right,
too.
We do. And now we've got a political science podcast. How about that? Okay. Last bit. Okay. June 4th. This is a while ago now. Peter Navarro. We don't talk much about federal politics, but Peter Navarro, he's an aide for President Trump. He said, quote, "Just last Friday, we had a plant, a groundbreaking in Ashland, Kentucky, the heart of poverty in America and Appalachia. $1.5 billion aluminum rolling mill because of the president's tax and tariff policy. So, unquote. Jasmine, there's so much wrong with that statement. There's just from a factual standpoint. So, first of all, the Brady plant that he was talking about, that's been in the works for more than a year. We've talked about it at length. That was kind of put in place at the end of the last legislative session. President Trump's tariffs on aluminum and steel were put in place less than a month ago, I think, that they actually became official. Another thing, Boyd County, where Ashland is actually in the top half of wealthiest counties in Kentucky. And Greenup County, which is where the plant actually is, he said Ashland, but the plant's actually in Greenup, which is close to Ashland, but not quite there. That county is in the top third. It's the 40th most wealthy county in the state of Kentucky. So the heart of poverty in America and Appalachia, not necessarily true about Ashland, Kentucky. Also, the idea that the tariffs are leading to this plant is kind of insane.
They passed that funding in March of 2017, something like that.
Yeah, you're right. That was March of 2017. Which is just, you know, that very end of the session. It's kind of crazy. All right, Jasmine, that's it for the stuff, but we have our conversation with Charles Booker coming up, and I'm very excited to share it with you.
Charles Booker is the Democratic nominee for the 43rd House District in Louisville. He won the primary in May with 31% of the vote against six other Democrat candidates. So the 43rd District follows the Ohio River in Louisville from the Shawnee neighborhood in West Louisville to Mockingbird Valley and Indian Hills in East Louisville. Mr. Booker received his law degree from the University of Louisville and has worked for the Louisville Independent Business Alliance, 1619 Flux, Louisville Urban League, Seed Capital Kentucky, and the Kentucky Legislative Research Commission. So, Mr. Booker, welcome to My Old Kentucky Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
All right. So this is actually your second run for elected office. You challenged Senator Gerald Neal for the 33rd Senate District in 2016. So I'd like to start by asking you kind of why you originally decided to run for office back then, what you learned from that first race, and why you decided to try again this year.
Yeah. Let's jump right in. So for me, this is very personal. I would hope everyone that runs says that. But it's absolutely true for me. Young guy, I'm from 35th and Market in West Louisville. I lived a life of a lot of struggle, saw my parents go through a lot of hardship to take care of me, witnessed the crime, the trauma that we see, the vacant abandoned properties, all these issues that we see now were my story growing up. Free lunch and food stamps all through school. And when I got older, I started to see that there was some systematic issues that were framing this environment. It wasn't just happenstance. And it really led me to go down this path to politics. Went to law school, got into politics. And I ran in 2016 for two reasons. They're Kaylin and Preston. Those are my two daughters. Actually, Preston was born that December before. And, you know, I was looking at the environment. I had a conversation with my oldest daughter, Kaylin, and she was asking some of the same questions I asked my mom when I was little. Like, why is there trash on the ground? And why are people dying like this? And why don't we have these types of resources that my friends in other parts have? I had that same conversation as a child, and I feel like it gave me a responsibility to be a part of the solution. I've worked in every level of government, and I've seen what we can do, and I felt like we needed something different. It was no affront to Senator Neal. I have a great deal of respect. He's someone that I've learned a lot from through the years, but I wanted to stand up for the community, so I ran for that. And that's really why I ran again this year. It was the same message, empowering the voice of the community because we need real change.
I really hope that every person running for office can say that they have passion for the legislature.
I hope so. what we see doesn't always say that.
Absolutely. So you're actually running for Darrell Owens' former seat. And Mr. Owens is retiring at the end of the year. He's 80 years old. The average age inside of Kentucky's Black Legislative Caucus is 65 years old. And if you're elected, you would be the youngest African-American man to serve in the Kentucky legislature since the very first person to do so, Charles W. Anderson. He was 29 when he was elected in 1936. There's several younger candidates running for office this cycle, but you're a young African-American man running for a state legislator seat in Kentucky and kind of the only young African-American man who's run in a really long time. So tell us what that means and what do you think you'd represent if you got to Frankfort?
Yeah, you know what? I'm really humbled by that. Just the weight of that probably just gave me another gray. So I know I'm going to age fast, and this conversation will be moot really soon. But I think it means a lot for the community where I'm from, where a lot of folks are disenfranchised, they feel disconnected, and in the news, we often talk about folks that look like me as a part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be able to step up in this way, to represent the voices of those that are marginalized, so many of my family, because pretty much all of my family, I'm one of about 65 grandkids.
Wow.
There are a lot of folks that are looking at me like, Charles, this is amazing. Like, we've never voted before. That wasn't something that meant anything to us because they don't hear us. They don't see us. And I think that's what we'll capture because I am a young guy. But I've been in all of these spaces working in the LRC. I was a director at Fish and Wildlife in the mayor's office, working with Congressman Yarmuth. I've seen, again, how government can be a part of the solution. And so I have a very unique story. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be one that'll help bridge divides in a way that we haven't seen in a while. That'll be my hope, and that's my mission.
I was just hearing about this report that JCPS actually released about how there aren't that many black teachers.
Yeah.
Representation is super important because if you don't see people do jobs, you know, you don't even recognize it as possible. And I think our legislators are definitely in the same boat. We need more young black legislators to make it seem like that's an attainable goal for people.
Absolutely. Can I give an example of why it's important? So House Bill 169 was something that you heard a lot about.
We talked about it a lot on here.
Yeah. And, you know, this is bill, like, gang violence bill, put air quotes around that. And there were conversations about how it would help the black community and how it would address the issues of crime. And when the conversations would come up, you knew they were talking about folks that look like me. Mm-hmm. They were talking about people that may be in my family or my peers or people that I've seen. But we weren't in the room. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a voice in that conversation. And I think changing that dynamic is going to be powerful because, like you said, just seeing yourself reflected. It's representative government. That's what we're supposed to have.
Absolutely. Another funny story. So the end of your tenure at LRC was pretty tumultuous, I guess is one word to put it. You appeared very briefly in a campaign video for Allison Lenergan Grimes when she was running for Senate against Mitch McConnell, and that ended up costing you your job. Jonathan Hirst, who was with the Grimes campaign and is, you know, I guess he's an aide for her at this point still, he called your firing in, quote, an appalling act of retaliation by McConnell's allies, unquote. So, you know, after this all happened, I guess Senate President Robert Stivers, who was like the chief Republican in the state legislature at that point, he denied any involvement in what happened. But, you know, if you win your election, you're going to join the very group that, you know, fired you. So I'm kind of interested to hear, you know, is there any like lingering ill will towards the legislature about this episode? And do you think that this situation will affect your service in any kind of way?
Not at all. Actually, I'm really excited about it. And one thing I always say, like when I talk to folks, I brag on the LRC. It's an amazing group of folks. They're experts that do very hard work and they go unnoticed.
Right.
And I mean, it's a brilliant bunch. And I was honored to be there. And it's funny. So when the conversation comes up, and I love this conversation, I don't get to talk about it a whole lot nowadays. My wife did a video.
Right.
And, you know, I am outspoken. I'm always the one that's going to be loud. Makes sense that I'd be in this position. My wife is the exact opposite. She's very quiet, and she would prefer to be, you know, be home with the girls, and she's not trying to stir up anything. She supports me, but in this moment, she wanted to speak up. It was an opportunity for her to be reflected as a mother, as a wife, and I stood with her. So when that opportunity came, I did, and then there was no violation of the policy, as was explained to me, and so I was happy to be fired then. So there was no ill will. And honestly, when I come back, I know I'm going to get a lot of hugs. And I'm going to lean on them because I know how important they are.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, honestly, just for speaking for me personally, like, I think it's great to have people who are in the legislature who have experience working at the LRC.
Right.
Absolutely.
Because
they do the tough stuff. Yeah. They really do.
Like, writing legislation and doing the work of government is really, really hard. And having people that understand the demands of that and understand like how legislation is composed in the legislature actually doing the work is super important. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk about your district a little bit. So, famously, Democrats split up the west end of Louisville into three House seats during the last redistricting, which means that your district and also Representative Attica Scott and Representative Reggie Meeks, those districts cover some of the poorest and also some of the richest people in the entire state. So Tell us how you will approach that challenge of representing both of those populations.
Yeah, I think that it's a unique opportunity that I want to really help use to build coalitions. I've often used the analogy of, you know, if you're on a plane, and actually this comes from Dr. Kevin Cosby of St. Stephen Church. If you're on a plane, if you're in coach or in your first class, if that plane goes down, we're all going down. Because I've worked in various spaces and I'm from, again, one of those poor zip codes, haven't left, don't intend to, but I've worked with some of the big families and you know, these huge multi-million dollar projects in the city and across the state, that I can speak across that divide and be a part of making that coalition. And I think for Kentucky, we need that, because there's a divide between Louisville and the rest of the state. If you know anything about Frankfurt and politics, you know that's true. From working at Fish and Wildlife, I would travel the state, sit down and talk to folks that have a walk of life story completely different from mine. But when we share our stories, we realize we want the same things for our families. We have the same concerns about our state and our future. And I think that's the opportunity. I've had to do it personally and professionally. And so I want to take this opportunity to take this weirdly shaped, banana-shaped district that pulls in a, you know, microcosm of the whole city and really use it to help bring us all together.
Right.
So the past legislative session was marked with strife about pensions and the state budget. So obviously the process from this year shouldn't be repeated. As a member of the House, what do you think you'll be able to do to hopefully prevent what happened in 2018 from happening again?
You know, first of all, I want to apologize to everyone across the Commonwealth that's listening, because that was a shame. It was an affront to the democratic process. Voices were drowned out. Things were rammed through without due diligence. And we should all be embarrassed by that. Now I realize, coming in as a rookie in the minority, and hopefully that'll change,
right,
that a lot of what I'll have to do is be vocal about that. And one thing I really want to do here on the ground in the district, I want to create a district office, and I'm getting support from some of the other Jefferson County legislators in doing the same, but really helping folks be connected up front and sort of see what's going on. We want more transparency in the legislature, right, so we should be transparent at home. Other than that, trying to get on the offense, you know, we were talking about the pension and budget, and a great guy, which I hate is leaving, James Kay, Representative Kay, was
from Woodford County.
An amazing guy, and he had, you know, was elevating the Kentucky Promise Plan, getting on the offense, and I think that's going to be a part of how we help change that as well. So I intend to be loud, and I'll lean on him even though he won't be there.
Yeah, okay. So we think that the lack of revenue is a major problem in the state, as do many others. Do you support comprehensive tax reform in the vein of HB 29, a bill that was sponsored by Jim Wayne and a host of other Democratic legislators in 2016? Would you be willing to co-sponsor a similar bill?
I would. And, you know, we realize that our tax system is long overdue for overhaul.
Right.
It predates the civil rights movement. It is one that puts a lot of burden on families that are at the bottom end, and we lose a lot of dollars that need to be invested into our state because of the loopholes and different things that need to be closed at the top end. And think about President Obama's phrase of saying that those at the top need to pay their fair share. It became a little cliche, but it is true that we're all in this, and all of us should be frustrated where Kentucky is. We're still at the bottom of the ladder in a lot of economic measurables. And reforming our tax system is going to be key to that, modernizing it, making it fair for working families. So that's something that I want to get on the offense about as well. And I'm excited representing an area that covers a lot of West Louisville, that has a lot of need for investment and has a lot of economic despair, that we can, again, get on the offense and take these issues on and not look away from them. I think that's why I was elected, because I'm going to be that type of person to get loud and be proactive and come in with an agenda and work with the leadership and help push for reform.
Well, that's good to hear. So add another name to the list. We've got a long list of people that would support that. So also, what are some issues that specifically animate you? So what are you the most passionate about, you know, the first bill you'd want to file if you're elected?
Yeah, so the two things that I'm really, really passionate about are criminal justice reform
Yes.
and And the issue with civil rights, the fact that Kentucky is still one of the most disenfranchised states in the country, a little over 26% of people of color, like myself, do not have a chance to make their voices heard. It is, again, an embarrassment. Mm-hmm. It's an affront to democracy. And it's something that I give Representative Owens a lot of credit. He's been fighting, he, Representative Crenshaw, and others for years.
Right, and he took the lead on the felony expungement bill, and he was great.
Which was huge. Again, we got to break down barriers so folks can live gainful lives. And then on the issue of criminal justice reform, just realizing the fact that we can't arrest and jail our way to safe and healthy neighborhoods and communities. And again, representing West Louisville, which I'm proud to do, and knowing that that's one of the most beautiful parts of the city. I say it all the time, 43rd District is amazing. But changing the narrative about how we address mm-hmm. issues of crime and looking at gun violence as a public health issue and really pushing for those types of reforms and alternatives to jail so that we can put people on a path to actually living a better life. That's really big for me. And economic equity is something I talk about a lot, too. Educational opportunities. So right now with the attacks, I'll say it, attacks on our public school system, mm-hmm. it's unfortunate. We're going to change that. Mm-hmm. But there are real needs for changes in our public school system.
Absolutely.
We need greater equity. And there are a lot of schools that are in the 43rd District that are in need of support, students that are in need of more cultural responsive curriculum. We need more restorative practices. And we need to, again, look at these students that walk into the classroom as humans mm-hmm. That are dealing with trauma and that are dealing with a lot of issues that need wraparound support. Mm-hmm. I'll be fighting for that. And I'll be making a lot of noise. You'll hear from me.
Good. Those are all my favorite issues. And you're going to hear more about alternatives to jail in the newsletter this week as well.
Read the newsletter. That's right. Yeah.
And finally, Mr. Booker, how can people get involved in your campaign? Where can they find you?
Yes, get involved. So my website you can go to is www.electcharlesbooker.com. You can sign up to be a volunteer, make some noise with me. You can follow me on Facebook at Charles Booker for State Representative. That is actually the handle is at Booker for State Rep. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Charles4LouKY. So that's Charles4LouKY. Follow me because every once in a while I'll get in an argument with a Trump administrative official calling out Bevin. He hasn't blocked me yet. So I'm just working on that and we'll make some noise together.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us. It's really a good conversation. I'm glad that we had the chance to have it.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter at MyOldKYPod. We have a Facebook page that you can like. Our podcast is on any podcasting app. We also have a Patreon that you can support us through. So you can donate as little as $1 a month to support our work, the creation that we make. It goes towards our hosting fees and things like that. And that's patreon.com/myoldkentuckypodcast. We also have a weekly newsletter now that you should definitely subscribe to. And that's at tinyletter.com/myoldkentuckynewsletter.
Excellent. Jasmine's got a great article in that one coming up on Friday. So definitely subscribe. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We will see you next week.